Hi, thanks for tuning in today. Welcome to another episode of The Smart Mouth, where science to social and history to human behavior are researched, compared, contrasted, debated, and debunked. We will always leave you with a little something you never knew.
Hi, welcome everyone. This is Amy. I'm here with Mimi.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
And our very special guest, Mr. Kevin Krebs.
Hi.
We are so excited to do this show because when we first started this podcast, this was one of the stories that
it
we
was.
Thought would be most applicable and most useful to our listener base.
Yeah, for sure.
Because so many of our listeners know, I have a sophomore and I'm embarking on kind of, should I be worrying about this college stuff now? Should I be...
What should he be doing?
Should he be doing something? You know, as early as eighth grade, you start setting up their schedule and they give you a carbon form and you're like, you pick your classes and they're like, here's your destiny. Here's the rest of your life. Enjoy it. Don't mess up. But
don't mess up.
You know, we start thinking about it earlier. I mean, than I did when I was in high school. It doesn't seem that long ago, actually, but
it wasn't.
It's different now. It's a lot different now. So we are thrilled to talk to Kevin Krebs, who is the founder of Partners for Achievement. Mm-hmm. Also brings to us a very unique perspective that is important to Mimi and I, the student athlete perspective, and then also the entrepreneurial perspective, and you're in media. So you have so many things we want to talk to you about, but tell us a little bit about you first.
First generation college student. So my parents came over after World War II. 1956, three kids, pregnant, $20, one suitcase, did not speak a word of English. I popped in a few years later in 1970, so I had four older siblings that all started at community colleges, went to four-year colleges, all of them became teachers, three of them eventually got master's degrees. I grew up on the northwest side of the city, went to Lane Tech High School, and from there ended up getting a full football scholarship to Northwestern, where I played quarterback, also pitched for the baseball team. So I like to say...
Just that?
Yeah. I'd like to say I was mediocre at both sports, yeah. But school was free, so that worked out pretty well for me. And then this is where, you know, I think life kind of started leading me down this path. I went to Northwestern, did really well in school, three-time academic, all Big Ten selection, and I graduated without a job. And so it was at that moment, you know, where I said, gosh, if somebody would have just given me a little guidance, I would have been able to kind of define what I really wanted to do and then say, okay, how do I get there? And so I did at the time what a lot of kids still do when they graduate without a job. They take out 30 grand in loans and they go get a master's degree.
Right.
So then I went to Medill. Broadcast journalism was my passion. Thought I was going to be the next Mark Giangreco or Dan Patrick, right? Take over on Channel 7 or SportsCenter. Yeah. So I
think you'd have been good at that.
Graduated from Medill, and my job offer was from a TV station in Greenville, Mississippi. And I said, what? You know, like I was so clueless. So here I was, you know, age of 25 with 30 grand in debt and a $14,000 job offer. And I'm like, how, you know, did anybody in the last 8 years not tell me what this path was going to be like? Mm-hmm. I think everything happens for a reason. You know, got a job at a production company here in Chicago, started a production company of my own 2 years later, won a couple Emmys, worked, you know, with the Chicago Bulls championship videos and did music
That's
videos
awesome.
With Jay-Z and documentaries,
oh, huh.
all kinds of crazy stuff. And then sold my company in 2010. I said, okay, what do I want to do next? And for about 15 years prior to that, I had been mentoring students at Northwestern, first generation students and student athletes, and had volunteered at a bunch of Chicago public schools. And I said, okay, let me look at what I really want to do. And then this kind of popped into my head.
Wow. So Partners for Achievement was sort of kind of born out of your volunteer work
exactly.
at Northwestern.
Exactly. And so for me, it was, you know, I looked at the cost of college was rising exponentially. Student loan debt was rising, you know, incredibly. Mm-hmm. The application and admissions process was so super competitive, but then kids didn't know what they wanted to do.
Right.
And they're taking 5 and 6 years to graduate. And then they graduate with all this debt and they don't have a job. And it was just a mess. And then I had kids. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is a huge topic that's not going to go away.
Right.
And when I saw an industry that had this tremendous need, because parents like us are, you know, worried about, you know, making the best decision for our kids, I looked at a lot of small independent shops out there that really didn't have the ability to scale. I saw some great websites that had a lot of information, but for a lot of parents, it was overwhelming.
Okay. I
saw, you know, independence with no bandwidth and technology information overload. And I said, gosh, if you could just create this program and curriculum and build a staff. And then the goal was get the kids into the best school possible, pay the best price possible, graduate in 4 years with a job. That was the cocktail napkin in 2011. And now, you know,
I like that, the cocktail napkin.
It was at Tap House Grill in Glen Allen, you know, over a couple of Miller Lights. Yeah. And, you know, just it started there. And then I put together the executive summary and now, you know, raised some money. And 6 years later, we've got, you know, almost 600 kids in our program from 70 different high schools here in the Chicago area, 7 different states, 3 different countries. And
really,
it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, you kind of think, oh, I should be just relying on my counselor for this, or my counselor will walk me through these steps. Like, is that not the case?
Well,
then?
The hardest part is the bandwidth for the counselors. You know, at an average high school in the state of Illinois, the counselors have a caseload of 491 students. And those counselors have other responsibilities, scheduling, discipline, you know,
right,
all these other things.
School,
so
right. They're running clubs within the school.
Like they have almost 500 kids and they only spend 23% of their time counseling for college. And so there's just no time. And then, you know, the counselors just are not in position to go as in-depth as most of us need to determine, okay, what does my kid want to major in? What classes should we be taking? What ACT score do we need? How do we do these essays? How do we map out a college visit? You know, how do you navigate financial aid, merit aid? Where do you find private scholarships? How do you pick a right major? How do you get an internship? What should I do in the summer? I mean, there's so many little intricate pieces of this process that I just said, hey, this is the single most important and expensive decision we're ever going to make for our kids. Why don't we put a team of people together and help families do it the right way?
Yeah. So that all of those things that you said are, I mean, I'm sitting here like overwhelmed.
You're sweating. You're like, oh my God.
But like, so when do you start something like this? You know, when you say, I'm a mom and I've got these kids and they're this age, when am I going to start to think about this process?
Over 60% of our kids start between eighth grade and sophomore year.
Okay.
Because for me, the decisions that you make early on have an impact, a trickle down, right? So if you've got a smart kid that's aspiring to a highly selective school, it's not just do I take AP classes or honors classes? It's what am I doing in the summers to help kind of build a standout factor to separate my kid from everybody else that's going to have the 32, 34, 35 ACT that wants to get into a highly selective school. Some schools look at weighted GPA. Some schools look at unweighted GPA. And people are like, what's the difference? Well, you know, at one school, I had a girl from Hinsdale Central. She had a 5.1 GPA, but the school that she wanted to attend in college looked at unweighted GPA. So she had AP Cs and some honors Bs, and the school looked at those like Cs and Bs. And so it dropped her GPA a full point.
Right.
Holy
and
cow.
So, and that's, I mean, to know that up front would be incredible because you're putting yourself through such a ringer to go into some of these honors and AP classes and then to find out that they don't even count would be like...
And then they're and they're bringing your points down.
Right.
Your overall,
and that I've talked about this before, like that feeling of regret, like if I only would have known.
If I would have known. I got a call from a family from Hinsdale a couple days ago about their financial aid. And so basically her daughter had a 32 ACT and she got into University of Indiana. And she said, well, why didn't they give my daughter any money? And I said, well, when did you apply? And she's like, well, she sent the Indiana application. And it was like early December. And I said, well, Indiana has a November 1st cutoff for merit scholarship. And she's like, what did that cost me? I said, $40,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because her daughter, if she would have known. But the application deadline wasn't until February 1st. But the merit scholarship deadline was November 1st. And she's like, well, how would I have known? I'm like, well.
So there's this company.
I'm just saying, it just so happens.
So we're thinking about getting them kind of set up and what, you know, they should be spending their time on. But when do you get them thinking about it? When do you say, oh, what school? I worry about adding pressure.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad we went to school when we did. I know I went to high school in the 80s. Life was a lot easier. These poor kids have so much time commitments and the stress and the pressure, right? And so I just say, listen, if you have a plan that's well thought out, it takes the pressure off. Everything is methodically mapped out for the freshmen and sophomores. We're only going to meet a couple times a semester. So we're not going to, you know, jump in and make you feel like you got to be 40 when you're 15, right?
Yeah,
we want to easy in, but we want to expose you to what the big picture is like so that you have an awareness of what's coming and you can make more well-informed decisions that have a bigger impact by the time you get to junior year, which is when the heavy lifting really, really kicks into gear.
Okay. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. and then with the like the test scores, like I just had this conversation with somebody the other day, and they were talking about how Illinois specifically has switched over to the SAT versus the ACT, and they had mm-hmm. some
a question I
theories
had too.
On why that had happened. And
it's because our state is broke, and the SAT undercut the ACT on price.
That's exactly what they said.
And there is a rumor that they might even switch back within a year or two. So it's just it's so confusing for these poor kids. You know, do they take the ACT? Do they take the SAT? Right now, I'm saying take both.
Okay.
Because the SAT just did a big redesign, so we don't know. You know, generally our curriculum has been geared more towards success on the ACT in the Midwest, just traditionally speaking.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see. But right now, I'm just telling the kids, just take both and let's see how you do. And then we'll kind of focus our test prep in one of those areas. But even with this, something as simple as that, you know, X factor is, okay, you know, I ask parents, do you know what the difference between a school that super scores versus one that doesn't?
Mm-mm. What is that?
Well, a super score is if you take, if the school does super score the test, that means you can take the test multiple times and they will take your highest English from your first test and your reading from your second test and your math from your third test. And
I like that.
And it's like, okay, cool. Well, which schools do that?
Right.
Well, there's a list of schools that do that. And at some schools, you know, like University of Chicago or Wash U or Indiana, they super score and that's great, but there's an incentive to take the test more times.
Right.
Then on the flip side, if you have a kid that's a really good student because they work hard and they're very conscientious and diligent, but they're just not a good standardized test taker. And I see that all the time.
Uh-huh.
There's over 600 schools that are test optional, which means they won't even ask for your test scores.
Really?
And so NYU, Wake Forest, DePaul, there's some you know, really good schools that you know, are test optional. So
and so, they, so those type of schools, they just look at kind of your grade point average?
They look at it more holistically, your grade point average, your resume, your extracurriculars, your essays, you know, those just
the
carry much
person.
More weight. And there's been multiple studies done that, you know, really show that grade point average is a much better indicator of academic success in college than a test score.
Because it's not one day.
Right.
It's the cumulative effect of how diligent you've been and how dedicated you've been to your studies.
So how do you... You're talking about when do we get these kids going, when do we, but like, you know, you're in high school, there's so many things coming at you. I mean, I think most people still think they may end up being a professional, you know.
Football player?
Something. And then they're like, wait a second, I got to find out now what's my major going to be in college. I don't even know, I've never even left my town or, you know, how do you kind of like streamline and be like, okay, well, you know, let's figure you out what, because I know I remember graduating and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't
like
know what my
major.
I have parents that still ask, I'm not sure what I want to do.
Yeah,
and so I just say,
true.
It's okay. We ease them into it. We use some different assessment tests, you know, for our younger kids, for our eighth graders and freshmen. We use assessments through a program called Career Cruising. A lot of the high schools use Naviance.
Okay,
so those are nice because they're like the starter set.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use a career interest inventory and personality test. It's called U-Science. And it measures their aptitudes, which are their natural abilities, their interests, their personality. And then that overlays it with best fit college majors and careers. And it just says, hey, based upon this test, these are some things that you might want to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do things like informational interviews or a job shadow or something like that to where, you know, the kids might have an interest and an aptitude in math and say, well, I want to be an accountant. And then they spend a day with an accountant during busy season. They're like, ugh, no thanks.
I'm good.
I want to do management consulting. I want to go talk to people, you know. And so that's part of that test is an accountant might like crunching numbers behind a computer all day, whereas a kid that's a little bit more of an extrovert might want to take those numbers and be more engaging with a client. And so it's just little nuances like that, but it just helps make more well-informed decisions. And then with schools, you know, the biggest thing where a lot of families say, where do we start, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so I say, we've come up with a system. We call it the four fits of a safe college list.
Okay.
And so that stands for social fit, academic fit, financial fit, and employment fit. And so we've got a bunch of questions under each of those categories to help kids start to explore what a good fit is for them and then go out and actually do some visits. You know, we say do a triangle tour, do a small school, a medium school, and a large school. Just keep an open mind when you're starting because a lot of kids, and I just tell the kids, you don't know what you don't know. When you're 15, you think you know, but you really don't know.
Yeah, right.
What do you say though, really quickly, you know, to a parent who are like, I went to Notre Dame and I want my kid to go to Notre Dame. But you know, that's not the right fit for them. Like, how do you kind of deal with something like that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, how do you kind
of. Very, very diplomatically.
Yes.
You know, and I just, you know, I acknowledge the passion for the alma mater, which I have for Northwestern, and I completely get it. And I say, you know, that might be one that we keep under consideration, but your child's the one that's going to college, and we've got to help them figure out what's going to be best fit for them. And it may be Notre Dame, but we've got to keep our options open.
Right.
And I'm all about having options for admissions and scholarship money.
Yeah. I love that term best fit that you use, because I think everybody gets so focused on the best college, Ivies.
That's what I'm saying.
Best fit, and when you talk about safe, the safe for tenets of safe is that there's a different college for everybody. It's not, Harvard is not the best college for everybody.
That's right.
No, and everyone has a different vibe. And to me, there are plenty of successful people that graduated from colleges all around the country.
Right.
And yes, you know, the Ivies might be great, Northwestern might be great, but we've got to find what's best for that child to succeed.
That kid. So given your experience being a student athlete, and, you know, I know that you went on to have a scholarship and that was kind of a different thing, but there's other aspiring kind of athletics that kid, you know, athletes that want to play in college, maybe D1, D3, maybe club, they don't know. How does that factor into the college choice?
Well, just adds another layer, right? I mean, I think for some of the non-revenue sports where you're not going to get a full scholarship, the first thing I try to do is say, hey, listen, you know, this isn't carte blanche, right? If you're playing baseball, there's 11 scholarships and they're going to have 25 kids on the team. So you're getting a partial. So, you know, and I always tell the kids, pick the school first and then the athletic program second. And so, you know, but that could be used as a little bit of leverage when it comes time to negotiate with the colleges. But more importantly, for the younger kids, they might need to start thinking about their summer programs and are they going to go to camps to get the exposure to start building the relationships with the coaches to get on their radar screen. So it's just another layer of this. And for every student that comes into our program, we've got to look, hey, we've got some that are talented musicians. We've got some that want to play lacrosse or tennis or, you know, what have you. And sometimes at some of the competitive schools, being a student, a recruited athlete can definitely help give your application a little bit of a nudge to get over the top with every other kid that wants, you know, one of the 5 or 6 or 8% that they're going to select in any given admission cycle.
Yeah. We have one coach that says, think the next 40, not the next 4. So he's like, pick a school that's going to keep sustain you through your life, not the next 4 years the sport, you know, because that's not what it's about.
The coach that recruited me to go to Northwestern left before I even stepped foot on campus.
Wow.
So he signed me and 1 month later left to go to University of Michigan to be Bo Schembechler's recruiting coordinator. So, but I chose Northwestern for the academics.
Well, being a Spartan, I'm glad you chose Northwestern. Yeah.
Well, that was my number two choice. This close to being
a
Spartan. This close.
Okay, so we talked about sports because a lot of kids, they think, well, you know, I go to school and I play sports, right? But what are some other trends if you're, you know, either if you are an athlete or you're not, that you kind of want to focus on and be like, okay, this is what colleges are looking for now outside of academics, you know?
Absolutely. I call them the standout factor, right? So what are the things that parents and students can help control beyond just the test scores and the grades?
That's
so the resume. Okay. So what activities and have you done any leadership? Have you shown any initiative? Admissions officers are looking for kids that have made an impact in their school and in their community. What have you done to leave your mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then next is the essays. And I think this is the part that's gone crazy since we went to school. I mean, we had one girl from Neuqua Valley High School out in Naperville. She wrote 39 essays this year.
Oh, my gosh. Her name must have been like...
Yeah, hand, you're dating yourself there. But hey... Okay, now there's this really cool thing called a laptop now. No, but 39 essays, could you imagine? And so, like, how do you write a compelling essay?
Well, right.
that's part of the process. And, you know, and then every school has their own supplemental essays, so that's a part of it. At some schools, they do an interview as part of the process. And then a lot of schools, they measure something called demonstrated interest. And it's basically how engaged is the student and how likely are they to attend the school if you accept them. So colleges are worried about their U.S. News and World Report ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing that happens for a good selective school is they accept a student and the student doesn't come. That makes them look bad.
So
now they're trying to gauge, okay, did the student, you know, see the rep when they were at Hinsdale Central High School? Did they visit campus? Did they open up our emails? Are they following us on social media? And these are ways that the kids and families are expressing their demonstrated interest.
Very interesting.
And colleges are tracking all of this. Not all of them, but a lot of them do.
It's an
element of this process. And I think if you understand how to take all of those little things, I call it the positioning of the student. If you know how to move the needle on all of those little things, there's a reason I think we've had a pretty good run in terms of admission success, sure. in particular at some of the more selective schools.
That's very interesting. So speaking of that, because you don't think about like the schools thinking of their own, you know, look at to the country as far as like
brand,
accepting,
yeah.
you know, I accept you, but you're not going to come. Are schools also seeing like, because I feel like so much is changing now with getting loans and things like that. Are you seeing a decline in overall attendance?
I mean, it's interesting. Over the last couple of years, it's kind of flat, maybe even a little down. But for perspective's sake, like in 1990, 1.3 million kids went from high school directly to college. Now it's 2.6 million. Okay.
Oh, wow.
386,000 international students in 1990. Now there's 1 million international students in school in the United States. And so, you know, it's a much larger group of students. And you're seeing almost a split. The selective and highly selective schools are getting much more difficult to get into. Mm-hmm. But at some of the lower schools, they're actually losing, not lower, but like some of the smaller privates or mid-sized publics, they're losing students. So they're trying to put butts in seats.
Okay.
They're trying to stay open. Like Western Illinois is down 28% over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Illinois might be shutting down, you know, because our state's bankrupt and they're losing kids. And so, you know, it's almost kind of created this tiered system. So those are some of the trends I'm seeing. And then the other trend that's just, you can read about it probably once a week if you picked up any number of newspapers, the student loan debt is just rising astronomically.
Right. And that's, we think about that because we talk a lot about current events and we talked a lot about the election and kind of the different perspectives that the candidates had on the election. And student debt is a huge issue for so many kids. And it seems like these colleges are just raising the prices because there's all this access to cheap money. So how do they stop that? I mean, we've heard about this Mark Cuban sort of philosophy that he has on trying to control that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, he wants to basically cap the amount of private student loans that students can have access to, which would then force the colleges either to lower their price or give better financial aid.
Okay.
Philosophically sounds great, but colleges, it's like moving the Titanic. I mean, it's going to take years and years and years before this system adjusts, because at the end of the day, the kids still want to go to the best schools and the parents are going to borrow money. I say in no other facet of life do people shop out of their price range like they do in college.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not
wedding planning.
Yeah. And it's not like a mortgage where you got to get approved. Right. Like a college, you can, you know, a parent can co-sign a Parent PLUS loan, just sign and do a master promissory note for the kid.
Boom,
it's done.
We'll worry about it later.
You know, but what I tell the kids, if you take out $25,000 in loans per year, by the time you pay it back over 10 years, it's $137,000.
Yeah.
And then if you change your major and you know, 24% of kids in the United States graduate from college in 4 years. 24%. 71% have debt and 21% graduate with a job. Okay?
We're speechless. That's what rarely ever happens.
There you go.
So don't you think though is like the next like bubble?
Yeah.
You know?
And I just said like this is families can point a finger and blame the school, they can blame the, you know, the government, whatever they want, or they can point a thumb and say, you know what? We spent more time running around with our 7-year-old to travel soccer games than we have talking about college and what does our kid want to do and where do they want to do, where do they want to go and what can we afford? Like, you know, I'm a parent, I've got 3 daughters. I've been driving around like every weekend, like a nutbag for a decade. Now my daughter's a sophomore and I'm like, all right, like, ooh, hey, honey, we got to kick it in gear here.
Like,
I know this really good company that can,
child,
that can help you with that, you know, but of course my kid doesn't want to listen to me. So what do I know? Right.
So. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's only your job. So tell us, how can Partners for Achievement like help in this process? Like what's kind of like,
our goal, you know, number one is there's got to be a mutual fit, right? So
The
family has to value education. The kids have to be willing to work. This isn't mom and dad write a check and smart people do the work for you. Okay. So this
That's
is a partnership. I named the company Partners for Achievement for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to work together to create a goal and then we're going to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to have a plan. And so we put together the plan and the plan is help plan for the best fit college, help them figure out what that looks like, help the family talk about the budget. And, you know, my running joke is even if you could afford to pay full price, why would you if you didn't have to? So merit aid, private scholarships, how do you maximize that? But then the outcome, right? Get them into the best fit college possible, pay the best price, but then graduate them in 4 years with a job. That's the goal. And so we have a team-based approach. We surround every family with a group of five experts. So a college counselor that works on their list and their applications, an essay coach that helps them, you know, with the essays, a career counselor that's going to help them pick a major and work on their resume and work on interview skills, financial aid and scholarship team that's going to kind of look at the money piece, and then a program coordinator that's just a traffic cop that's going to say, okay, every semester of high school, are we doing the things that we need to do to stick with our plan? And so that's our philosophy. The majority of our kids, will work with them all the way through college as well, which is a lot different than most. It's not just, you know, get them out the door, pat them on the butt and say good luck. You know, we want to stay with the kids to make sure that we're doing the right things.
Right. And you, when you talk about employment fit too, I mean, kids don't really know when they're a freshman maybe what they want to do, but as they go along in school, their major might change and they meet people, they have internships, they have experiences. But then getting the job, we're also focused on getting our kids into college. I think we forgot what college is for.
Yeah.
You know, that we're, you're like, you want them to be self-sufficient, move out of your house, you know, feel successful and get on with their life. And that means getting a job.
Yeah, no, and it starts early. I just tell the kids, it's not just what you know, it's who you know. And so for us, it's getting the internship. Some of these companies, and we've got relationships with some great companies, they're actively recruiting college sophomores. So 19-year-olds, I mean, we've got a couple of juniors in our college program that already have job offers for when they graduate, you know, 15 months from now. And that's game-changer stuff for a lot of the parents.
Sure. And then having access to somebody like you during school. I mean, I changed my major for reasons that I would never admit on this show. But I'll tell you later. But
hot guy and some other major?
Or no, what? It had nothing to do with that, definitely. But I'm just saying, like, if you have somebody to counsel you to say, be like, is that really the best choice of a major change for you? Or is that really what you want to do? What are you going to do with that after you graduate? You know, I kind of was like, I want to change my major, and then I wanted to change it back, but I was out of state and I was in my fourth year and my parents would have killed me. So I'm like, I'll just finish with this. This will be good and I'll just make it work. But, you know, having access to people who can say, this is what the forecast looks like for jobs in that field. You know,
That's exactly what it is. It's put together the 4-year plan. And if we need to adjust, add a class, drop a class, withdraw from a class, change a major, we have the plan and we can say, okay, hey, to get back on track to graduate in 4 years, we got to bang out a couple of gen eds at COD this summer. Or, you know, all these little things that can help make a difference. And, you know, and sometimes just people need somebody other than mom and dad to help them through different pieces of life.
That's a huge part too. Cause I have a friend who says, my kids aren't going to go to college. It's not a good return on my investment because they're not going to come and they're going to have a job. And I was like, maybe if we just thought about this in a different way, you know, and maybe if you, like, if you're going to take anything out of this podcast, is make a plan, it's not that much, you know.
It's too important and too expensive to wing it.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, amen to that. So thank you so much for your time, Kevin. We have learned a lot in our little bit.
I'm a little less
stressed because I feel like that I could plan it now. Like, I feel like
you're a little bit closer than me. I have a little more time, so maybe I shouldn't be so
stressed. Not as much as you think.
I know, that's the thing.
It
happens fast.
You don't. Anyway. Partnersforachievement.com. You can get all the information you need there. They're also on Facebook, and they have a lot of career college planning and career success workshops available in the Chicago area. One on April 11th, Hinsdale South. I'm going to read these off real quick, but they'll all be on our website. The 17th, Downers Grove Public Library. April 19th, Hinsdale Public Library. April 20th, Lake Forest High School. And on the 22nd, at the headquarters for Partners for Achievement in Oak Brook. So, but call them, set up an appointment, ask some questions, and make your plan. Yeah. So thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay.
Anytime.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.